Welcome, and thank you for joining the National Multiple Sclerosis Society's MS Learn Online Internet Program. I'm Rick Turner, your host and medical correspondent. Similar to people with other neurologic conditions, individuals with multiple sclerosis can experience episodes of uncontrollable laughing and/or crying or other emotional displays. This phenomenon has been variously referred to as pseudobulbar affects, pathological laughing and/or crying, emotional lability, emotional incontinence, emotionalism, involuntary crying, and most recently, IEED, which stands for Involuntary Emotional Expression Disorder. This is a frustrating and at times embarrassing condition. This webcast is the second of a two-part series that will help us come to understand this effect and how one can cope with it. Our two guests joining us again today are Dr. Timothy Vollmer and Dr. Rosalind Kalb. Dr. Vollmer is chairman of the Division of Neurology at Barrow Neurological Institute at St. Joseph's Hospital and Medical Center in Phoenix, Arizona. Welcome to MS Learn Online, Dr. Vollmer.
Thank you for inviting me.
Also joining us today is Dr. Rosalind Kalb. Dr. Kalb is a clinical psychologist and director of the Professional Resource Center of the National Multiple Sclerosis Society in New York City. Great to have you with us, Dr. Kalb.
Thanks very much. I'm glad to be here.
Good. Well, let's begin by talking about the social impact that this disorder can have. And Dr. Kalb, I can only imagine that this problem could have a significant impact on relationships and social situations in general. Tell us more about that.
Well, I think there are really two aspects of it that are very challenging for people. None of us likes to feel out of control, particularly of our emotions. So for the person who's experiencing these uncontrolled episodes of laughing and or crying, it's just another way of feeling out of control of something that we typically take for granted. So it's an uncomfortable personal experience. In addition to that, I think it's a behavior that is very easily misunderstood by family members, friends, colleagues at work, because the emotional expressions are so inappropriate to the situations in which they occur. And it's very easy for people to be put off by that, to start to avoid somebody who behaves in this peculiar fashion. So a person who's experiencing these uncontrolled episodes can begin to feel very uncomfortable, embarrassed about this behavior, anxious about when these episodes might occur, with an end result being that the person starts to withdraw from their environment at work, at home, with relatives and friends.
Just as a layperson talking about this, I can imagine that when you observe someone with this condition initially, you might think they're mentally unstable, and there's sort of a taboo that you wouldn't want to broach that subject with them. And the person, I'm sure, senses that. So there's a lot going on in that situation.
I think that's exactly right, Rick. It's hard for people to talk about, and nobody wants to bring up the subject.
Right.
So it's difficult.
Yes. And Dr. Vollmer, what would you add?
I don't really have much to add. I think that Dr. Kalb has really well described what the problem is in this particular syndrome. And I would just emphasize that it can be particularly destructive to interpersonal relationships, both with loved ones and with more casual acquaintances, and is an important issue for some patients.
We talked earlier in the first program about how common this condition is in people with MS, maybe 10%. It's kind of hard to get a handle on. But in terms of diagnosing it medically, is there a specific way of doing this? Dr. Vollmer.
Unfortunately, I would say no, at least from the neurology perspective. The challenge here is going to be in the future on both sides, in having patients and families recognize that such behavior actually may not reflect the true emotional experience of the patients. It may simply be a side effect of the disorder or a symptom of the disorder, and also to get the medical profession to begin to recognize it as a symptom that is treatable and needs to be diagnosed specifically. The problem here is that somewhere in the interview with a healthcare professional, someone needs to either ask or bring up the fact that an individual is having emotional responses that seem to be problematic. And the patients may not understand why they're having these emotional responses. And families often refer to it as emotional ability, that the patient flips into either laughing or crying at a very slight provocation. Once there's a recognition that there might be a problem, then the clinician needs to take the time to understand the emotional basis of this particular symptom with the patient. And that means talking with them and helping to understand what provokes these responses and what the individual is actually experiencing on an emotional level. And if they can identify that there's a disconnect between the emotional expression on the face versus what the patient is actually feeling internally, then that will help lead them to making this diagnosis and setting up a specific treatment plan. But I think this is something that Dr. Kaub and her profession is also going to be particularly important in, because many of these patients who have this uncontrolled emotional ability also have symptoms of depression. And as a result, sometimes we need to sort those two things out and not allow them to be lumped together. Rosalind, what do you think?
I think that's a very important point, because people need to remember that this uncontrollable laughing and crying can occur in a person who is not depressed at all, but it can also occur as a separate but equally important problem in a person who is depressed. So it means that the family and the clinician need to work together to sort out all the possible factors that are contributing to the person's emotional state. And that can take time. Fortunately, there are a couple of instruments that have been in use for a while in MS that clinicians can use with their patients to help zero in on what component of the problem may be related to this particular disorder of uncontrolled laughing and crying.
And give us some examples of those, Dr. Kaub.
The two that have been most commonly used are the pathological laughing and crying scale, given the fancy name of PLACS, which is something that the clinician can actually administer with a patient, asking series of questions that will help zero in on this problem. There's also something called the Center for Neurologic Study Lability Scale, which is a self-report, so a clinician can give it to a person who's experiencing some complaints like this, and by answering these questions, again, zero in on whether this is a problem of uncontrolled laughing and crying versus another kind of mood disorder.
And Dr. Vollmer, I want to go back to you for just one more note about diagnosis. So you can't look at an MRI, for an example, and say, aha, that's what's causing the problem.
Well, unfortunately, not at this time. We don't have any specific abnormalities on the MRI that actually correlate with this particular symptom.
Okay. So let's turn now to coping with this disorder. What type of interventions are there for this condition? Dr. Vollmer, I'll stay with you.
Well, first I would say is education. It's very important that the family and the patient be educated as to the biological basis of this particular symptom, so that the potential impact that it has on interpersonal relationships can be minimized, at least from a negative standpoint. Education is extremely important. Unfortunately, in the current medical system, there's less and less support for clinicians to spend time educating patients on this particular issue. However, I think that if families through the National MS Society and other organizations become educated about this, that they can help influence the clinicians to spend the time to help them diagnose this accurately and then educate them as to its basis. There have been for many years, though, some drug therapies that appear to have some benefit here. The earliest therapies that have been used included using an antidepressant in a class called tricyclics. Classic example of this is a drug called Elavil or amitriptyline. And early studies suggested that relatively low doses of this medication, given mainly at night, could actually suppress this symptom significantly throughout the following 24 hours. There is this tricyclic medication. Since that time, there have been small reports suggesting that other classes of antidepressant medications may also have a role to play, and these include SSRIs. However, I would say that the studies on both of these are relatively limited. More recently, there's been a development of a newer agent, which is a compound made up of two longtime approved agents in the United States. One is called dextromethorphan, which is an agent commonly used in cough medications, over-the-counter cough medications to suppress cough. And the other one is a drug called quinidine, which has been used as an anti-malarial agent as well as a heart medication to help control heart rhythm. And this compound, which is currently being reviewed by the FDA, is a mixture of these two, such that the goal is to have the dextromethorphan survive longer in the circulation so that it can actually enter the brain, and there it appears to inhibit these reflex centers we talked about earlier that express this emotion. The quinidine, which is part of it, is used primarily to prevent the liver from breaking the dextromethorphan down quickly so that it actually lasts longer and can have a more important biological effect. The dose of both of these is relatively low in this compound, and it has been studied in a couple of different studies now in MS as well as in other disease disorders. And if this drug is approved, it may become another opportunity for patients to ameliorate this particular symptom.
So, Dr. Vollmer, this is very interesting. You've said these are antidepressants, but clearly this condition is not depression, right?
That's correct, Rick. It turns out that the therapies, including the tricyclic antidepressants and the SSRI antidepressants, have been identified as potentially useful, mainly because these patients were being treated as though they had depression, and it was found that this particular symptom was suppressed at doses of these medications that would not normally be thought to be effective for the depression. And it was only through those observations that identified them as potential opportunities.
And Dr. Kolb, in terms of other intervention options, what would you add?
Well, I particularly agree with the education part, but I would just like to add that I think some people with MS may also be in a position of having to be ready to explain this disorder to their physicians, because it's relatively uncommon with 10% of people in MS. They may actually be seeing physicians who are not familiar with it. And so one of the things that this program will help people do, as well as other publications from the National MS Society and other organizations, will be to help patients advocate on their own behalf so that their clinicians will take the time to do the kinds of diagnostic workups that we've been talking about on this program. In addition to the education, I think there are some self-management strategies that people can also try that I've seen some success with myself. I think it's important for people to try and learn to recognize the feeling of this buildup of emotion as it's happening, because sometimes with some slow, deep breathing or saying to the person to whom you're speaking, "Excuse me, just give me a minute," sometimes people are able to kind of get a grip on that explosion of feeling by doing that kind of deep breathing, by distracting themselves or focusing in on some other very concrete activity like counting objects on your desk. These self-management strategies are certainly worth trying. I think it's also important for people to learn how to talk to others about what's happening to them. As with many other aspects of MS, the person living with the disease often has to put on his or her teaching hat and be prepared to inform others what's going on, to sort of normalize it as, "This is a symptom of MS. I deal with it. Please excuse my inappropriate laughing. It'll pass," or "my inappropriate crying," so that they're managing the situation rather than the situation managing them.
Well, it's a fascinating topic, and it's great to understand it better. So I thank you both, Dr. Timothy Vollmer and Dr. Rosalind Kolb. Thanks again.
Thank you.
The National MS Society is proud to be a source of information for you about multiple sclerosis. Our comments are based on professional advice, published experience, and expert opinion, but do not represent individual therapeutic recommendation or prescription. For specific information and advice, consult a qualified physician. If you have a question that was not addressed, please email us at mslearnonline@nmss.org. If you'd like more information on multiple sclerosis, click on the resources link on your screen or call the chapter nearest you for an answer to your question. You can reach your chapter by calling 1-800-FIGHT-MS. That's 1-800-344-4867. You may also want to check the National MS Society's website, where you'll find more information about today's topic and a menu of other webcasts available to participate in. Funding for this program was provided as an unrestricted educational grant from Avanir Pharmaceuticals. For the National MS Society, I'm Rick Turner, wishing you health and happiness.